Morning. It's 11 minutes before 8 a.m. This is Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 40 degrees under overcast skies. Today is Tuesday, March 18th, 2014. I'm Melissa Marconi-Wenzel with Raven News. Governor Sean Parnell wants to look for ways to get natural gas to Alaska's coastal communities. He says a gas line and LNG plant could benefit more than rail belt communities. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Parnell says all of Alaska will benefit from the pipeline through jobs and increased state revenues. But he also wants to figure out a way to get gas or a byproduct to southeast cities, Yukon River villages, and other towns near the water.
The resource of that gas can be available to coastal communities because it's coming to tidewater. So large volumes of gas to tidewater at Nikiski can move to other coastal communities.
Parnell told a meeting of the Southeast Conference, a regional economic advocacy group, that he has plans to study how that could work.
I am creating, through an administrative order, a roundtable or commission of people with coastal community experience and leadership to bring these issues to the fore of the gas line negotiations across the next 18 months.
He says he's interested in exploring propane, a byproduct of liquefying natural gas, as fuel that could be transported by barge or ship. It's not an unusual idea. Jack Massalem is mayor of Prince Rupert, a coastal British Columbia city with an expanding port facility.
I have seen proposals where they actually float an LNG facility in, and it's contained on 3 to 4 1,000-foot-long barges.
He says Ketchikan Shipyard might bid on maintenance and repair of such vessels. Doug Ward, who manages that facility for Vigor Alaska, says he's also looked into the idea.
In Norway, there's a whole industry around small and mid-sized LNG projects where they have cryogenic barges or small LNG freighters, all within the capacity that we have here in Southeast to build, operate, and maintain.
A number of coastal communities are served by businesses that deliver propane for cooking and sometimes heating, but it's a smaller amount than Parnell proposes. A company called Alaska Intrastate Gas tried for more than a dozen years to develop a larger propane distribution system using Canadian gas. Efforts in Southeast never panned out, but the governor remains optimistic.
My vision for Alaska is that our river communities and the coastal communities that rely on fuel oil, too, would not have tanks of fuel oil to have to fill, but would have propane tanks in the decades to come.
He says gas could also be trucked to rural communities along the interior road system. A similar plan is already under development for Fairbanks. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting in Juneau.
The University of Alaska Lands Office is offering 2 timber sales on Midcuff Island, south of Petersburg, this year. The lands on the southern and western side of the island would be helicopter logged. Meanwhile, the state of Alaska is also in the early stages of writing a plan for Southeast's new state forest lands. Joe Vicknicki reports.
One of the planned university timber sales is on the Wrangell Narrows, about 14 miles south of Petersburg. It covers over 360 acres of mostly hemlock and spruce forest. The second is on the southern end of the island. It's near Banana Point, about 29 miles south of town. That parcel has over 300 acres of old-growth spruce, hemlock, and yellow cedar. Patrick Kelly is regional resource manager with the university's statewide land management system office in Anchorage. He says helicopter logging is planned for both sites.
The South Midcoff parcel has existing Forest Service roads, and there may be some conventional logging activity on that. That's up to the bidders to present, but the intent was a collaborative effort with the U.S. Forest Service and the Alaska Division of Forestry. There's a helicopter in the area at this summer and a very limited time window for use of the helicopters. And that is one of the reasons the university put it out at this time.
Total estimated timber volume on the two parcels is 6 million board feet on the Wrangell Narrows site and 11.5 million at the South Midcoff site. However, Kelly says the total volume harvested will be lower than that amount and will be up to the winning bidder for the trees.
They have you know, a bottom line that they need to make it profitable for the helicopters to come in because the helicopters are so expensive. So what it does is it really narrows down the field of what they will cut and certainly reduces the impact to the land of the operation.
Proceeds from the two timber sales will help fund university scholarship and research programs. Kelly says these are the only two sales planned for the Petersburg area in the next 5 years for the university. Logs from the sales can be exported, and once they are complete, the university may offer firewood from the two sites to local residents. The land office hopes to award the timber sale contracts in late April. Also this spring, a state agency is drafting a plan for the newly created Southeast Alaska State Forest. That's state land on 40 parcels covering around 48,000 acres in the central and southern panhandle. The legislature designated the lands for timber sales in 2010 and 2011. Jim Schwarber, forest planner with the state's Division of Forestry, says one of the requirements for establishing a new state forest is writing a management plan for the land.
And we're currently working internally to develop that draft and are also doing public involvement outreach with scoping and seeking input from the public and agencies and other entities as we put together the first draft plan for this new state forest.
Near Petersburg, some of the parcels are on eastern Mitkoff Island. Others are on the southern end of the island near the planned university timber parcel. Schwarber says the state is asking for input from people who have used the lands in the past or who know about the different areas of Southeast.
All state forests do provide for multiple uses, though it's important to recognize that the primary purpose for a state forest, in particular this state forest, is timber management and timber production. We like to use the phrase, we want to manage it as a working forest, which basically means actively manage it for a sustainable supply of timber to help supply the local industry in Southeast Alaska.
Other state forest lands are around Wrangell and on Prince of Wales Island and near Ketchikan. Schwarber says the state wants to identify other uses of the land and water around the timber parcels.
For example, we did have a meeting with the Southern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association to discuss the water quality needs for the Neats Bay Hatchery, which is their flagship hatchery in southern Southeast Alaska. So we work with other landowners, other communities, other interests to ensure our final management plan does recognize and properly protect some of those existing uses.
The designation for state forest land also allows for second growth thinning on the parcels that have already been logged. Unlike the U.S. Forest Service and its planning process, the state does not complete an environmental impact statement with multiple alternatives in a forest plan. The state planning process can take up to 3 years to finish. The Division of Forestry hopes to release a draft plan for public review later this spring. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicknicki.
The deadline to comment or bid on the university sales is Wednesday. Find out more about those offerings at ualand.com. There's more information about the Southeast State Forest planning process at forestry.alaska.gov. Legislation passed the Alaska House of Representatives Friday that expands a popular tax credit to include herring. KDLG's Mike Mason has more.
House Bill 204 was sponsored by Representative Alan Osterman from Kodiak. The bill expands the Salmon Product Development Tax Credit to include herring, with the goal of allowing seafood companies to further diversify their product forms. Osterman spoke to the bill during Friday's House floor session. He cited a conversation 4 years ago with some commercial fishermen from Western Alaska who wanted to find a way to encourage more processors to buy and process herring.
They also saw the need that if they started processing herring in Western Alaska, they would also pick up on processing foregone harvest of salmon at the same time. Between the two fisheries in Western Alaska, each one of them are small enough that it made it just about uneconomical for major processors to take a look at that area. And so by combining the two together, it becomes an economical issue for Western Alaska, where they can extend their season in employment and jobs if they can get herring and salmon being processed at the same processing plant.
Osterman believes the herring fisheries in Western Alaska are underutilized. He notes that only about 10% of the harvested herring is actually used, which results in the rest of the fish ending up in the waste stream. Another aspect of HB 204, according to Osterman, is to incentivize more use of fish byproducts across the entire state.
We anticipate within the near future that we will either be forced into it or we will ourselves take the necessary step to do 100% retention of all products that are caught in the ocean off our shores. And when that product is brought ashore, we have to do something with it. So rather than just grinding it up and dumping it in the ocean, if we can make a human-grade protein out of it, then it has value.
The third major component of the bill is to allow additional use of the Salmon Product Development Tax Credit for canned seafood products. Osterman noted that pop-top can production was inserted into the tax credit several years ago.
The industry and the customer base didn't like the pop-tops. And as it turns out also you can't stack them on a shelf because the pop-top cans themselves, then the ones on the bottom become a problem and actually break the seal.
House Bill 204 was approved unanimously by the House of Representatives and now moves over to the Alaska Senate for consideration. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
And the ferry Aurora is sailing again after being tied up for about a week. Part of the small ship's steering system broke down March 8th. It made it into Whittier, where it remained until Sunday. Marine Highway spokesman Jeremy Woodrow says a steering pump had to be removed and sent to Seattle to be rebuilt. He says the Aurora sailed part of its Prince William Sound route Sunday and began full service yesterday. The 235-foot ferry links Whittier, Valdez, and Cordova. It carries up to 250 passengers and 35 vehicles. The 37-year-old Aurora sometimes fills in for its twin, the Leconte, which serves small Southeast Alaska communities. That's all for Raven News for this morning. It's 8 a.m. This is KCAW Sitka. You can listen to or read most Raven News stories again on our website, kcaw.org.